to the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.tv radio, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.tv radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. It's April 17th, 2018. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here in Eugene, and it is cold and gray. As usual, I guess it's April. We're still in that cold zone. So I want to thank you for joining us, and I want to thank our affiliate, KEPW, for carrying our show. I think the days... If you're in the Eugene area, the days and the hours change on when they play our show. And that has to do with just the flexibility. I suggest that they, you know, instead of a hard schedule, I think they move us around a bit because of the nature of our show, but I still appreciate it. They are carrying Leiby Halevi's show. You can go to see our schedule on their website, kepw.org, and look at their calendar for the radio show, and you'll see where we're at for the week, I guess. And on that vein, I kind of do want to promote this for any of our listeners that are in the Willamette Valley. That's the valley where I live here in Oregon. The KEPW is having a fundraiser this weekend on Friday, 4/20, as it is in Eugene. It's going to be at the Wow Hall, and it's a kind of a big fundraiser. It's called the Green Ball. It's called the Green Ball, KEPW Green Ball Festival or something like that. But it'll be at the Wow Hall, so enough of that. I do not have a guest with you for us today to talk to, and I've kind of been, I sort of did that intentionally because, I really feel this need to share some of my opinions about things, and I think we're at a critical time. And then I plan to sort of talk about, I don't know, a lot of this politics stuff that has come up, because it feels as if the world is on the edge of destroying itself. I think everyone's on the edge. We have volatile leaders. We have people that are really using our lives as a badminton ball, going back and forth, talking about whether they're going to destroy us, not destroy us, destroy us, not destroy us. You know, and then we have that... the insanity of what really does happen on this planet, where I saw in the Google News this morning, they said scientists accidentally invented an enzyme that is expected to eat all the plastic on the planet. Now, I don't know about you, but that kind of made me laugh. Like, really, that's their idea. They're hoping they can accidentally create an enzyme. Scientists hope a new enzyme will eat plastic pollution. And I guess that's because, you know, the people that are making money don't want to stop making plastic. But it's kind of like this, what happens with the nuclear stuff. At what point are we going to start telling the truth about what really happens? I mean, it is beyond comprehension. Let's see if I can pull up these stories. You know, I recommend if you're really interested in following things, to actually do go to Facebook and go to Hanford Challenge, go to the Westlake Landfill, Clearwater Creek, you know, go to the communities. Just type in the community that you're interested in, and I guarantee you that there will be some type of an organization of individuals who are working really to stop the ebb and flow of constant contamination. So that's what I did this morning when I was thinking about, you know, what is it that I want to talk about? Because we have so many urgent things. But to me, the number one thing is still the nuclear contamination. We still are living in the secrecy, in the shroud of the Manhattan Project. And that means us talking about Hanford, and it means us talking about what's going on in St. Louis, Niagara Falls, and all these communities that were really poisoned by the Manhattan Project. And they just act as if it's just a job, right? Contamination from a nuclear cleanup forced a shutdown. Investigators want to know who is responsible. That's April 16, 2018, and this is out of the LA Times. As crews demolished a shattered nuclear weapons plant during 2017 in central Washington, specks of plutonium were swept high up in gusts and winds blown across a desert plateau above the Columbia River, where, by the way, most of our food is grown. Most of the fruit grown in Washington is grown there. Check out where your apples come from. The releases at the Department of Energy cleanup site spewed unknown amounts of plutonium dust into the environment, coated private automobiles with a toxic heavy metal, and dispersed lifetime internal radioactive doses to 42 workers. The contamination events went on for nearly 12 months, getting progressively worse before the project was halted in mid-December. Now state health and environmental regulators, environmental department officials, and federal safety investigators are trying to figure out what went wrong and who is responsible. And then they have a picture of this skanky old plant out there in the middle of the desert. Of course, what went wrong? They have no safety regulations. That's what went wrong. They are lying about everything. Okay, back to the story. The events at the Hanford site near the Tri-Cities area of Richland, Pasco, and Kennewick vividly demonstrate the consequences when a radioactive cleanup site spirals out of control. He's talking about Hanford, folks. The mess has dealt the Department of Energy's Nuclear Weapons Environmental Management Program yet another setback, following more than a decade of engineering miscalculations across the nation. This is so outrageous. They act as if this is just not that big a deal. Energy Department officials said in a statement that workers received only a tiny fraction of plutonium exposure that is allowed by regulations, and there should be no threat to their health. They declined requests for interviews. Of course they did. A tiny fraction. What is it? 1/32 millionth of a gram is enough to make you sick from plutonium. Did they receive that, sir? Did they receive less than that? If they receive less than that, there might not be a threat to their health. But anything beyond 1/16, a 16th millionth of a gram, beyond that, they know it's toxic. If the current investigations substantiate the statement, it would be fortuitous. They are not in control, John Martell, the Washington Department of Health official who oversees radioactive air emissions, said about the Energy Department and its contractors. We want them to stop before they become a public health threat. Wow. Tom Carpenter, executive director of the watchdog group Hanford Challenge, asserts that the demolition plant used too many unskilled workers, attempted to do the work too fast, and stopped and failed to adopt known safety measures that would have helped contain the contamination. They took shortcuts and stupid risks, said Carpenter. They gambled and lost. No, we lost, Tom Carpenter. We lost. The mishap occurred at one of the nation's most radioactively contaminated buildings, known as the plutonium finishing plant. The factory, which opened in 1949 a few miles from the Columbia River, supplied plutonium for thousands of U.S. nuclear weapons before it was shut down in 1989. It was a notorious site where Harold Mikulski, later known as the Atomic Man, survived a 1976 explosion in which he was exposed to 500 times the occupational limit for radioactivity. The exposures from the plutonium releases last year were minuscule by comparison, estimated to be a small fraction of the background radiation that every human gets from nature. But unlike cosmic radiation or radon gas, plutonium can lodge itself inside the body and deliver tissue damage alpha particles over a lifetime. Union officials say they can accept the health risk of working next to a contaminated equipment, but not an uptake of plutonium when eating lunch or driving a car home after protective gear is off. It is very upsetting they don't care, said one exposed worker who would speak only on condition of anonymity out of fear of retaliation. He said he was not given a kit to test for plutonium exposure until he asked for one in early December. They have no clue how exposed I was, he said. I look at it down the road and am mentally worried about it. It is emitting energy into my bones. Plus, it is a poison. My wife is worried. My kids listen to the news and know what happened. I have to put it in front of them as no big deal. I don't know why he has to do that, because he's afraid of retribution. The price tag for cleaning up nuclear waste at Hanford site just went up another $4.5 billion. In their statement, Energy Department officials said that they are concerned about any health consequences, long-term or short-term, that any of the workers on the site may face at any time. We are addressing the workers' concerns by being as open and transparent with our workers as possible about what we are doing to stabilize the situation. Another long-term employee at the Plutonium Finishing Plant, or PFP, who met with a Times reporter, said the operation was out of control even before the demolition began. As workers removed equipment to prepare for walls to be torn down, air monitoring alarms sounded almost every day, he said. Workers were subjected to repeated nasal smears to determine if they had breathed in plutonium dust. Wow. Nobody wanted to work at PFP, he said. People who had been working at Hanford for 30 years were getting out, saying, "This is insane." As the project fell behind schedule, many of the workers were compelled to put in as much as 90 hours a week. Slave drivers. Everything we were told to do at work began to deviate from the plan, he said. Seven employee automobiles were contaminated at the plant site, according to a January 9 letter from the State Department of Ecology to Doug Shoup, the federal site chief at Hanford. When one worker demanded that his contaminated car be purchased because duct vents were potentially still contaminated, Energy Department contractors nixed it and offered him a coupon for a free detailing from a car wash, according to collective bargain grievance records cited by union officials. The account was confirmed by two other employees. Can you imagine that? These Department of Energy officials were willing to expose not only this worker, but those car detailing workers to this plutonium? Wow. An even more serious concern was the potential for the workers to have contaminated their homes after leaving work. The Department of Energy dispatched teams to take samples in 8 private homes and found no contamination, a Hanford site spokesman said in a statement. The demolition, costing $57 million, was being conducted by one of the nation's largest engineering firms and most corrupt, I might add, CH2M, a unit of the Texas-based Jacob Engineering. CH2M is now under federal investigation for the releases, according to a letter sent by the Energy Department's Enforcement Office in late March. So you know what will happen, folks, if CH2M is found responsible? And this is really what happens. They will file for bankruptcy, close their doors, shake their hands, and open up a brand new company that will still get contracts with the same people, the same decision makers, and the same everything. Because there's no accountability because of the Price Anderson Act. So outrageous. A spokesperson for the company declined to comment and referred questions to the Energy Department's Hanford site office. In March, the company released a preliminary analysis of the contamination and blamed it on a half a dozen factors, including a fixative that was supposed to bind the dust but was too diluted to work properly, and a decision to accelerate demolition when contamination deemed to be stable. Wow. The Energy Department's plan for demolition originally required the contractor to, listen to this, to remove debris as it accumulated. But in January 2017, before the first releases, officials authorized CH2M to allow the debris to pile up, according to a monthly site report by an inspector for the Defense Nuclear Facilities Safety Board, an independent agency. In fact, workers at the plants of the demolition site was ringed by eight-foot-tall piles of radioactive debris with little to prevent dust from blowing off. An 8-foot pile of debris. No, not pile. 8-foot tall piles of radioactive debris. Piles of radioactive debris. 8 feet tall. That's as tall as most people's ceilings in their houses. That is so beyond comprehension that anybody would order that and just walk away, just pile up plutonium dust in a mound that's 8 feet tall like it was sand and say, well, bye guys, see ya, we'll come back to work tomorrow. Who are these people? Obviously not human. Not long after, of course, the first plutonium was detected. Another series of dispersals occurred in June, which resulted in a short week stoppage. The workers at the plant said radiation alarms sounded throughout the facility, resulting in chaotic massive evacuation. And then in December, a 3-day series of dispersals was recorded and became the basis for what is now a 4-month shutdown of the project. 4-month project shutdown. Meaning the project is shut down right now. 4 months. It's been closed down since they found the contamination leaks. They made 8 feet tall mounds of plutonium dust. What were they thinking? And they just left it there. Alex Smith, who oversees the Hanford site for the Department of Ecology and shares oversight responsibility to the State Department of Health, said the decision to allow debris to accumulate probably increased the risk that winds could transport the dust. You think? Gee, that takes a lot of scientific knowledge to think about that one. Plutonium was detected by monitors and collection plates about 2 miles away, near a public road, and potentially 10 miles away. Potentially. You notice they didn't test there, though. Washington 2 senators sent a letter to the Energy Department on December 22 expressing grave concerns about the releases, Congressional staff say the contamination is not surprising because the Energy Department offers bonuses to contractors if they meet tight schedules. But there are no bonuses for preventing worker contamination or preventing releases to the environment, they say. The problems at the plutonium finishing plant were not an isolated event at Hanford, which has struggled with its cleanup for more than a decade. Work was stopped 5 years ago on key parts of a $16.8 billion waste treatment plant that is supposed to turn 56 million gallons of radioactive sludge into glass. Technical difficulties in its design are still being studied while delays mount. $16.8 billion. That's what the cost was supposed to be. What do you think it's going to cost now after things have been shut down? Technical deficiencies in its design are still being studied while delays mount. Several years ago, the Energy Department pushed back the full startup by 17 years to 2039. It hopes to begin treating some less radioactive waste by 2022. Wow. This infuriates me, you guys. I don't know how you feel while I'm reading it, but it just, this freaking wakes me up first thing in the morning to read this. I'll tell you what, I'm like, what? I'm getting my Scooby-Doo moment every second of this article. Okay, back to the article. Last year, a tunnel was stored railroad cars full of contaminated equipment collapsed. The Energy Department pumped the 358-foot-long tunnel full of concrete mixture. A decision is pending about what to do with a second storage tunnel, 1,688 feet long. So they'll just let that one collapse, and then they'll decide to pump concrete in it. See how many people we can kill in the meantime. The state attorney general, along with Hanford Challenge and a union, is suing the Energy Department for venting noxious gases from underground waste tanks over recent years, sickening workers. Smith, the ecology manager, said a lot of cleanup progress has been made at Hanford. Hundreds of buildings have been torn down. Much of the soil along the banks of the Columbia River has been cleaned up, and enough for future use. Enough. That makes me angry. And the site's 9 nuclear reactors have been put in stable condition. Say what? 9 nuclear reactors are there? Have been put in stable condition? Wow. I venture to say there's a lot about this plant that we don't know about. Then they have a picture of the Columbia River that looks super beautiful. I don't know. We'll have to talk to Matt Hallstrunk and see. I'm just blown away that people will even go in this river. They had plutonium processing plants right on its banks. They still have it. It's still exposed to waste. Okay, let's get back to the story. But the well-publicized problems have put state officials on edge about contamination that could affect public health. One of the factors that helped reduce the risk of the release is the relative isolation of the plutonium finishing plant, which is deep inside the 586-square-mile Hanford site. But other contaminated facilities scheduled for demolition border the Columbia River and are close to residential communities and fields that grow grapes, potatoes, and corn. I mean, we're talking like on the other side of the river, folks, like right there. This is so outrageous. Whoa, these people were just not thinking when they built this place. One of those facilities, known as 324 Building, was used to extract plutonium from spent fuel, said Robert Alvarez, a former Assistant Secretary of Energy and longtime critic of the cleanup. The facility has civilian waste from Germany sent as part of a research project, as well as a large amount of radioactive waste that was placed in unlined burial pits, he said. Records of what lies in the pits were destroyed in 1988. Oh my gosh. They just destroyed the information. These people are criminal. I mean, seriously, they are criminal. When the demolition of the plutonium finishing plant will resume is unclear, along with who can authorize it. In a statement to the Times, Energy Department Press Secretary Shailen Haynes said, the decision to stop work at the site was made on-site by the contractor, but letters by the State Health, Ecology, and U.S. Environmental Protection Administration officials over the last several months indicate they issued a stop work order that applies until they determine that work can be conducted safely. So there are one, two, and three agencies involved. The Energy Department statement said it opted to demolish the plant in open air because it was a proven safe method. But now the statement said it is looking for lessons learned from the releases. Who'd have thunk that plutonium releases could contaminate people? State officials, meanwhile, are asking for additional safety measures, potentially a temporary tent or other structure over the plant. You think? I mean, these people are so completely dense. I don't know how they deal with this. John A. Christian, a veteran of nuclear demolition projects at Energy Solutions who was not involved in the plutonium finishing plant demolition, says such containment structures have been used at the cleanup of Energy Department's Rocky Flats plant in Colorado and at an Idaho National Laboratory site. Yeah, well, if that's true, then they pretty much failed. In the most extreme circumstances, you put a building over the building. All the dust and debris is contained inside, and it is removed through an airlock. That's what they're doing. They've done that at Fukushima, if you guys have looked at that. And that's the end of the story. Let me tell you who wrote this and when it was printed, because this was a pretty, and I was blown away. This was in the Los Angeles Times, dated April 16th, 2018. This just broke just yesterday. And there is another Hanford story I wanted to share with you. I believe we have plenty of time to read this one. This just tells you, the reason I'm talking about Hanford is Hanford's really in everybody's backyard. It's on the West Coast in Washington, and as you know, winds blow from west to east, which means even if you think that you're not being affected, you're being affected by Hanford. I mean, it is beyond outrageousness. Title of the story, this is dated April 13, 2018. Hanford's Toxic Avengers, Department of Energy suppresses deadly nuclear cleanup flaws. Ooh, yeah. Here's the guy, they have a picture of a whistle and a whistleblower. Your tax dollars are on the line. The DOE is set to extend a contract to Washington River Protection Solutions for another year at the Hanford site, despite numerous allegations of misconduct since the company won the initial contract for $7.1 billion in 2008. Below is an investigative report that appeared in the Seattle Weekly in 2012 on the suppression of whistleblowers by the DOE, Bechtel, URS, and WPRS at North America's most toxic site. So this story was written in 2012 and still holds true today. This is really sad. And it is signed JF. What does JF mean? Hold on. Sorry, I'm scrolling down to the bottom of this very long story. Let's see if I can find the guy's name. It says JF. Joshua Frank is the managing editor of Counterpunch. That's who he is. Okay. So the title, again, is Hanford's Toxic Avengers, Department of Energy Suppresses Deadly Nuclear Cleanup Flaws. Mm-hmm. Once home to the nation's largest plutonium-making facility, Hanford, Washington is now the most toxic nuclear waste site in the world. The U.S. Department of Energy is currently spending $2 billion a year to clean up the 586-square-mile reservation. However, all is not well on Washington's dusty southeastern edge, Whistleblowers are stepping forward claiming that the taxpayer money is being spent recklessly on a project riddled with potentially deadly design defects. Donna Bush, who has been employed by contractor URS, originally known as United Research Services, as acting manager of environmental and nuclear safety at Hanford's waste treatment plant that we were just talking about since 2009, is among the latest of these senior managers to speak out about what she sees as a silencing of those who raise concerns about possible lethal safety issues. Last November, Bush filed a complaint of discrimination under the federal whistleblower protection statutes with the U.S. Department of Labor, alleging retaliation against her for reporting problems at the WTP, which one day will turn Hanford's 56 million gallons of highly hazardous radioactive waste into storable glass rods through a process known as vitrification. Yeah, so we just read how that's going a big fat nowhere. Climbing the corporate ladder in the male-dominated engineering world was no easy feat, but Bush, as numerous co-workers say, is tough, politically savvy, and scientifically skilled. After attending graduate school at Texas A&M and before arriving at Hanford, Bush was the chief nuclear engineer and manager at nuclear safety at the DOE's waste isolation plant, pilot plant in Carlsbad, New Mexico. That is the WIPP that did fall apart a few years ago. Wow. She was the chief nuclear engineer and manager of nuclear safety. Bush's job at Hanford is to ensure that the site's contractors produce adequate documentation to support the contractor's compliance with federal environmental and nuclear safety laws, meaning that virtually no aspect of the construction can take place at the WTP until Bush says it is safe to do so. I'm where the nuclear safety buck stops, she says. If Bush says stop, the work must stop. But saying stop to the wrong guys, Bush claims, has gotten her into a heap of trouble with the Hanford higher-ups. Among her grievances, Bush claims that she has been sexually harassed by URS manager Bill Gay. In Bush's official complaint, she explains that Gay made inappropriate and sexist comments to her in an unscheduled meeting, including comments that women, that quote, women react emotionally while men use logical thinking, unquote. Gay allegedly told Bush that as an attractive woman, she should use her feminine wiles to better communicate with her male cohorts. Gay apparently also said that if Bush were single, he would pursue a romantic relationship with her. Yeah, don't do me any favors, bud. Bush notified the human resources shortly after Gay made these remarks, at which point he reportedly apologized. Gay would not comment on the allegation. Perhaps even more damaging are that Bush's claim that beginning in 2010, the lead contractor at Hanford, Bechtel National Inc., Bechtel. If anybody has any investments in Bechtel, I strongly suggest that you take your investments out of Bechtel. Do not invest in these people. Okay. The lead contractor at Hanford, Bechtel National Inc., shirked safety compliance, signing off on shoddy work in order to meet deadlines, again, the deadlines that would earn the contractor large financial incentives. For example, radioactive waste stirrers called pulse jet mixers have had numerous design problems, such as erosion and potential leaking. Despite these concerns, Bechtel pushed through testing, saying they were sound. Their timing was impeccable. It was late June 2010, and by having their plans finalized by the end of the month, the company would receive a $5 million bonus for reaching cost and scheduling goals. Bush says that during the time that she was viewed as a roadblock to meeting these goals. As a result, Bush's concerns were suppressed and Bechtel's managers allegedly sought ways to retaliate against her. But the management at Bechtel and the DOA didn't know whom they were dealing with. In October 2010, Bush took her concerns to the Defense Nuclear Safety Board an independent governmental organization that oversees health and safety issues at the DOE's nuclear facilities. After her comments were made during a public hearing at the DNFSB on October 7th, Bush says she was openly admonished by a former DOE assistant, Ines Trey, for her testimony. Wow. In her Department of Labor complaint, Bush alleges that after her testimony, Trey told her that, quote, "If your intent was to piss people off with your testimony, you did a very good job," unquote. Trey, now a visiting scholar at the Florida International University, did not respond for comment after multiple phone calls and email requests. Wow. When Bush showed up for a second day of hearings, she claimed she was approached by Frank Russo, who runs the WTP project for Bechtel, Bill Gay, and Leo Sane, a senior URS vice president. They all urged her to recant her testimony when she met with the DNFSB. She replied that she would not. Even worse, when Bush returned to work after the hearings, she alleges WTP managers kept her isolated and out of meetings that she was both authorized to and required to attend. She also says that since Bechtel controls the work and supervision of persons assigned to her, that the company has actively sabotaged her work since Bechtel employees go around her, defy her efforts to supervise them, all without consequence. Wow. She is currently waiting a response for the Department of Labor about her complaint to Bechtel's story. When coupled with all of that, the DOE's Dr. Don Alexander, as outlined in the Seattle Weekly's last fall, it's called The Nuclear Option, October 19, and remember this was written in 2012, provides ample evidence that management at both Bechtel and the DOE are at best ignoring and at worst actively retaliating against experts with inconvenient opinions. And because it's nuclear waste that's being dealt with, their alleged negligence could ultimately prove deadly. And yes, it is proving deadly. The government's manufacturing of plutonium to fuel the atomic bomb was a scientific achievement unlike any that came before it. At the nucleus of this gargantuan undertaking was Hanford. The roaring Columbia River provided the much-needed water to help keep its reactors consistently cool, and Hanford's remoteness allowed the facility to operate with scant international attention. It sickens me to see what they have done to the Columbia River. To pick one of the most magnificent sites in our country and fill it full of nuclear waste is just beyond comprehension. Today, Hanford no longer produces plutonium for nuclear weapons. Instead, the scientific and engineering minds employed there are tasked with an equally, if not more, daunting endeavor: cleaning up one of the largest radioactive waste sites in North America. The DOE manages the Hanford project for the federal government, but contractors such as Bechtel and URS, which is now CH2M, act as the design and contract specialist for the site's most important undertakings, the construction of the WTP. Once the glass rods roll out of the WTP, which will be a first-of-its-kind operation, they are to be stored in a safe place where a radioactive leak is far less likely than it is today. Hanford's waste currently remains in an old underground tanks that are decades past their lifetime. And so check this out. That vitrification plan has been put off till, what did they say, 2028. So these are just pie-in-the-sky ideas. Oh, yeah, we're going to build this vitrification plant and turn everything into glass. But no, we don't know how to even build the plant yet. These people are so outrageous. They're just straight-up murderers. This is like government-sanctioned murder. While Bechtel holds the primary contract for the DOE to build the WTP, URS acts as their subcontractor, and the companies split all fees 50-50. URS also holds another contract for managing Hanford's tanks farms, where the 56 million gallons of radioactive waste are being held. Over the duration of the WTP contract from 2001 to today, that's 2012, Bechtel had raised their proposed budget from $4.3 billion to $12.263 billion. Wow. So from 2001 to 2012, it tripled, which will, with more increases likely to come. In late August, the DOE's construction project review team estimated an extra $800 to $900 million. That's $1 billion, folks. $900 million is $1 billion, would likely be needed to finish the job. Watchdog groups like the Seattle-based Hanford Challenge says the final cost could top $20 billion. Of course it could. Outrageous. Either Bechtel drastically underestimated the cost to build the WPT, or they blatantly misled DOE when they said they could complete the project for $4.3 billion. This is not the first time Bechtel has increased a government contract and never failed to deliver. In March 2006, the Inspector General, the Special Inspector General for Iraq Construction, an oversight group set up by Congress to keep an eye on government contracts in Iraq, found that Bechtel was mismanaging a hospital project that was way over budget. Bechtel, that's Dick Cheney's son. No, that's Donnie Rumsfeld's little company, isn't it? Old Don Rumsfeld, who still, by the way, has a desk at the Pentagon. In mid-October 2004, Bechtel scored the contract to build an Iraqi children's cancer hospital for $50 million, promising to complete the construction by late December 2005. However, Seeger's report found that Bechtel likely wouldn't finish the work on the hospital until at least July 2007, with the final price of $169.5 million. So they got the contract for $50 million, and they're finishing it for $170 million, again, three times the cost. After Seeger's report on Bechtel's gross mismanagement, the government canceled the company's contract for the hospital. Another contractor later completed the hospital construction in 2010. So we spent $170 million starting to build a hospital and then had to pay somebody else to finish the job. Wow. This incident wasn't unique. A 2007 Seeger report found that fewer than half of Bechtel's projects had met their original objectives. Fewer than half. Additionally, the majority of Bechtel's Iraq projects were canceled, reduced in scope, or never completed at all. Now a number of engineers and scientists like Don Alexander are wondering why Bechtel isn't coming under the same kind of congressional scrutiny for any its even larger contract to build the WTP. So that is probably why we have the M2H, what's the name of that hideous company that they have over there? I just read it. Hold on. Let me get, see if I can find the name of the company, because I think this company is probably a Bechtel company. That would be my guess. And they do this intentionally, because who can remember the name of this stupid company? I've said that to Heidi a couple of times, like, who names their company letters? CH2M. CH2M. I'm going to write that down. Hold on. CH2M. Ownership. Let's see if we can get into that one. Oh, wow. CH2M Hill is the largest employee-owned company. That's hilarious. Let's go back to this Hanford Challenge story. Okay. Beg your pardon, you guys. Okay. A high-ranking DOE scientist at Hanford, Alexander, first spoke out in this publication to express his concerns with managerial and operations aspect of his work at the WTP, as well as the plant specifications that had been carelessly accepted as safe and sound. In one instance, Alexander pointed out to the DOE's and Bechtel's refusal to reevaluate their so-called pulse jet mixer design, which was supposed to keep the radioactive waste at the WTP constantly moving, after his own study showed that the containers that held the mixers would erode, potentially causing lethal radioactive leak. Alexander says that following the article, the DOE is now paying close attention to the issue and has assigned one expert from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, 9 full-time staffers, and 11 Bechtel employees to resolve these problem designs. But new evidence has emerged in a lawsuit filed last May in Washington State Court by Dr. Walter Tomasotis of URS that implicates high-level DOE employees of silencing Tomasotis, who was removed from his management position at the WTP after he raised concerns about the plant's faulty designs. In a deposition taken in this lawsuit in July, that's 2012, Bechtel's Frank Russo verified the names of DOE officials with whom he had discussed Tomasotis. Dale Knudsen, Federal Project Director at the DOE at Hanford, DOE Director Secretary Daniel Poneman, and Ines Trier, who served as Assistant Secretary for Environmental Management under Secretary of Energy Stephen Chu until July 2011. Trier and Poneman were Obama appointees. Wow. In the deposition, Tomasotis' lawyer, Jack Sheridan, asked Russo whether or not he had, via email, told his boss, Bechtel President David Walker, that Trier, Poneman, and Knudsen all, quote, understood the reason for Walt's departure, unquote, and that the DOE can't be seen as involved. Russo confirmed this, admitting to telling Walker that he had briefed Trier and Poneman on the issue. The guy's name is Walter Tomasotis, by the way, you guys. They didn't say that. In early November 2011, Tomasotis filed a second lawsuit against Bechtel and the DOE in federal court. Among other things, Tomasotis' suit alleges that Bechtel management and the DOE brass were concerned that the issues Tomasotis was raising could put an additional $50 million of WTP funding into jeopardy. So it's about the money. It's really still about the money, folks. The DOE had filed a motion of delay to delay certain evidentiary aspects of Tomasotis' case from being allowed in future court proceedings. Future court proceedings. On Monday, February 20th, the DOE asked the court to dismiss the suit. The court trial is tentatively set for June 13th, nearly 3 years after Tomasotis' termination by Bechtel from the WTP. Additionally, in early December, Tomasotis testified in front of the U.S. Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Subcommittee. At the hearing, he explained how he was removed from his job and forced to work in an off-site, windowless basement as a warning of sorts to others who were contemplating speaking out. The panel is currently considering legislation that would extend whistleblower protections to employees of government contractors. Well, that never worked, did it? It only got worse for the workers at Hanford. The DOE says they do not comment on issues relating to pending legislation, such as that levied by Tomasotis. But now, for the first time, two veteran Hanford scientists are adding their experiences to this unfolding saga by blowing the whistle on what they see as blatant corruption and mismanagement at Hanford's WTP. With these endeavors, the new whistleblowers claim DOE management is not only complicit, but taking direct action to hide glaring technical problems from the public, problems that could lead to catastrophic nuclear accident. They act as if this is just some minor fact that they... I don't think we're going to have time to read this entire story, you guys. At 78, a longtime Hanford chemical process engineer, David Bruce, says his enthusiasm to do the right to do the job right was as great as ever. Many of his co-workers, past and present, see Bruce, who has worked for various Hanford contractors for more than 46 years, as a mentor of sorts, a man whose words are worth heeding. The pursuit to stay on schedule has crippled the entire operation, he said. This sucker is not going to run as currently designed, plain and simple, and a heck of a lot of people around here know it, but are too afraid to speak up. Wow. Last December, Bruce decided he'd had enough. He was aware of glaring technical flaws, such as problems with the mixing design that could lead to lethal leaks into the WTP and prevent it from ever running properly. These problems had not yet been addressed, and in a meeting with top management, including Russo, Bruce stood up and made his points. After that meeting, Russo came up to me and asked to meet with me later to discuss the issues I raised. He was a bit surprised. It was the first time that anyone in a high-up position at Bechtel Management had seemed concerned with the issues he was raising. While he thought the meeting went well and felt that Russo heard him out, he had very serious doubts about whether necessary changes will ever be made. Russo and Bechtel would not comment directly on the claim that management continues to override technical staff. But the company insists that Bechtel's responsibility to the American taxpayer is to ensure the balance in designing and building a plant that will safely and effectively operate to protect the people and environment from the hazards and risks of the radioactive waste, unquote. Right. That's their job. Yet, on January 13th, the DOE's Office of Health, Safety, and Security, which is tasked with overseeing work carried out the DOE's nuclear sites, released what some, including a DOE employee who did not want his name to appear in this piece for fear of reprisal, have called the most scathing review of Hanford ever to come out of the Independent Oversight Committee. The document was direct in its criticism of the culture that permeates Hanford's work environment, finding that, quote, only 30% of all survey respondents feel they can openly challenge decisions made by management, unquote. The report goes on to state that there is a strong perception that you will be labeled or red flagged, and some individuals indicated that they were transferred to another area by their supervision after having raised concerns. So it's all about move along, we're not talking about it. I am not going to read the rest of this story, you guys. It is super long. It goes on and on and on. I mean, this is kind of where my sentiments have been. This story was written in 2012. CH2M Hill has taken over from Bechtel. We don't hear about Bechtel anymore after we discovered what they've done. So what does CH2M Hill say? They say that it's an ownership company. This is hilarious. CH2M Hill recognizes the largest employee-owned company in engineering and construction industry. Well, isn't that quite clever? CH2M Hill. I wonder who owns it. Let's see what it says. CH2M Hill, a full global service engineering construction company operations firm, has been ranked the nation's sixth largest employee-owned company, according to the National Center for Employee Ownership. Wow. Rankings are based on number of company employees. Companies must have at least 50% owned by current and or former employees through a broad-based employee ownership plan. I am shocked to hear that. So let's just talk about this. Board of Directors. Chairman of the Board. Because there is no way. You know, what a clever idea that the nuclear industry has, isn't it? To get the employees invested in this thing. Jacqueline Hyman is named chairman of CH2M Hill, a female, announced that the board of directors, unanimous appointment of Jacqueline Hyman as the chairman of the board, effective 2014. It's really interesting when you're looking, trying to figure out who owns a company and who are involved in the company. You know, it's really devious when you start looking for connections on that, and you keep popping up the same thing. Let's see who the investors are. This is so beyond comprehension. Learn more about, okay, Jacobs' acquisition of CH2M Hill. So it's this Jacobs company, but who is on the board of directors here? Steve Demetrio was on the board of directors. I'm always fascinated by this. Like, who are these people? What kind of human beings are they that they can actually just blow off knowing that they are contaminating the entire Pacific and the entire Northwest? I mean, plutonium blowing across the desert, 8 feet high stacks of plutonium, and just walking away and going, oh, time to go home, and not even covering it up. So I did want to get to the nuclear news. I actually have like a nuclear alert on the Googles. And I know people say don't use Google because they track everything, but I actually believe that they all track everything. I don't believe that any of them, if whoever it is that's tracking you, if they want your information, they can get you. So I am using the Googles because it's the most used. But I was kind of cruising through the headlines here, and this is very interesting because Forbes magazine really pushes hard to sell nuclear plants, nuclear weapons. You can just look at it from the titles, and the guy James Conker from the Forbes writes these stories all the time, pro-nuke. But, you know, Exelon official says no nuclear plants to be built in the U.S. That was World News and Report dated April 16, 2018. Report, losing FirstEnergy's nuclear fleet would wipe out 2 decades of solar and wind progress. Let's read that. Let's see what this report says. See how they frame these things like, oh, if you don't let us keep the nuclear, you're going to really have a hard time of it. Why did that turn dark? FirstEnergy's plans to shut down nuclear power plants has focused on the attention of clean energy boosters on environmental impacts. FirstEnergy's 3 nuclear plants under threat generate, oh God, more zero carbon power than all Mid-Atlantic region wind and solar power plants put together. These kinds of statements just infuriate me. I cannot even read that. This is written by Jeff St. John. And I am not going to read it because he doesn't, you know, the way they talk about these things, it's beyond comprehension. It is not zero-based. Because to build these nuclear facilities, they used a ton of carbon. And to maintain them, once they shut down, they're going to use a ton of carbon. So I can't even go there. So I'm not going to, because it'll make me spit nails. Oh, my goodness. So I see we have 30 seconds left just about, folks. I want to encourage everybody who's in the Eugene area to come out to the WOW Hall. That's on Charlton and 8th here in Eugene, Oregon, this Friday evening to support KEPW. There'll be live music out. I think it's a donation of $10 that's recommended. I don't think they'll keep anybody out. Thank everybody for joining us. Put your courage feet on. Take some action. I really do appreciate everybody listening to this show and giving these ideas some thought. We'll talk to you guys soon.